Hey, what's up, psychos? Welcome to another episode of Take Your Pills, Psychopath, the comedy podcast that exploits mental illness for personal profit. What? Why would someone do that? You'd almost have to be farcically villainous in order to do that. Trademark. Anyway, I'm John F. O'Donnell here with
Juliana Maher.
And we are so excited about this week's episode. We got so many interesting topics to cover. We have, we're going to check in with each other about our mental health, see how we're doing, see what's going on. Juliana, why don't you ask me how my mental health is going?
John, how is your mental health going?
You know what? In this moment, right now, I feel good. But I want to be able to say, oh yeah, everything's cool. Everything's going well. I'm doing great. But this week has been challenging for me. Because I still don't have a steady day gig and it's starting to stress me out. There may be something in the works, but I haven't gotten any kind of start date on it yet. And I need to get something relatively soon. So I think that not having that thing to do during the day is structure is affecting me negatively, and sometimes I'm just like not getting out of bed.
Absolutely no, that is totally both it's normal and also really difficult. That's the whole thing.
So yeah,
that's really hard.
Yeah, so I'm struggling with that, and then full disclosure, I kind of then start feeling like, oh, I can't make any money. And then I equate that to where I'm at with comedy. And then I start comparing myself to other people. And I just kind of get into an all around negative, not productive mental space.
Yeah, it's kind of spiral. I know exactly what you mean. I think it is really easy to equate, even though you know it's not, because it can be a completely unrelated day job. When you're not making money, it somehow feels like your creative pursuits are lesser, even if they're not related. I've never fully understood that, but it's interesting that you articulated that well.
Yeah, it does sort of, they do feel connected, even though they're not necessarily connected. But also, I guess it kind of, it bleeds over into being like, if I'm not making money in general, I'm like, why am I not making more money doing comedy?
Right.
So maybe that's how it somehow gets correlated.
Right. And also, I mean, when I have a day job, I'm tired and I'm working all the time. When I'm not doing comedy, I don't feel guilty about it, because I'm like, well, of course I'm not doing comedy because I can't because of, you know, the job. When I have a bunch of free time, if I'm not being really productive with comedy, then I definitely feel worse about it.
Yeah, that's fair too. So basically, psychos, those are my little struggles lately, but I am doing what I got to do to stay well. My four in place. One of my four is too much in place. My big four of being on meds, staying sober, sleeping enough, because I think I might be sleeping a little bit too much, which can end up being bad, because then it can kind of like, it can flip a little bit, and then I could potentially be in a position where I'm not sleeping enough, but that hasn't happened. And then I've still been doing my sets and having fun on stage and working on my bits and putting my act together. Speaking of, I guess I could let folks know about some upcoming shows. You know what? First though, because I don't want to be rude, I want to check in and see how your mental health is.
Thank you. I was wondering if you were going to do that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a monster.
My mental health is pretty good. Interestingly, I'm not going to say what it was, but I got very good news at work. A lot of good stuff is happening, which for me is often a time when my mental health is not necessarily great, when good things happen. I'm going okay so far, but I'm trying to remember that.
Okay, that's
cool. And
just
kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah, like when everything's right, it's like...
When really good things happen, it tends to spiral me a little.
Yeah, there's...
So far not, but...
Yeah, there's a quote by the Grateful Dead that goes, "When life seems like easy street, there's danger at your door."
That's a terrifying but fair quote.
I just wanted to quote
you.
The
just
Grateful
wanted to
Dead.
Justify my mental strain
and put more anxiety on top of
it. I appreciate
it. Sorry
that.
About that.
No,
that
that's okay.
Unintentional.
Yeah.
unintentional. But yes, Julianne has some very good news that, yeah. Sorry, Psychos, we can't share quite yet.
I guess
yet.
I can say that I'm going to London. I can say. So I'm going to London for 6 months.
Julianna for work gets to go to London for 6 months.
Crazy.
Exciting.
Very exciting.
So cool.
So cool. They've got the funniest accents.
They do.
I'm also just stressed now because it means moving for 6 months and all of the practical stuff that I wanted this for so long. Now I'm like, it's that thing of like, oh shit, all of the stuff that goes with it of like, I have to get a visa. I have to like figure out how to sublet my apartment. I have to find somewhere to live in another country. I'm so excited, but I'm a little overwhelmed.
Yeah, you got to do all the things now.
I have to do
now.
That in 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
6 weeks.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. That's going to be stressful.
It's going to be tight.
But you'll figure it out.
I will.
You're capable.
I'm very capable.
You're strong.
I'm medium strong.
You're medium to totally strong.
Yeah.
Medium to totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be all right. I'm going to figure it out.
You're going to be great, man.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Should we do the plugs?
Yeah.
All right, cool. And then Psychos, we're going to get into some really interesting topics that we found on the interwebs to go over with y'all.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing, drop us a line at takeyourpillspod@gmail.com to let us know what you'd like us to cover on the podcast and just to say hello. It would be cool to hear from y'all.
Send us your problems.
Send us your problems, your thoughts, your criticism. Deepest, darkest secrets.
Especially those. I'm a big fan of those.
We want your secrets.
Just do what you would do at a sleepover.
Yeah. I mean, if you've been listening to the podcast, you must have a sense that you know us. Mm-hmm. So let us know you.
Yeah.
You can join the newsletter at jfodnews.com to find out about live shows and when podcasts drop and stuff like that. You can follow us on social media at jfodlovesyou and at Juliana_Maher.
Mm-hmm.
You can support the Patreon at patreon.com/JFOD. You can always spread the word about the podcast. That always helps. And you could rate and leave a review. Oh my goodness, why not do that? Help
like
the algorithm.
Like and subscribe.
Also, live shows. I have a really fun show every Friday in Brooklyn at Cobra Club. It's called Live from Outer Space. And we're doing a very special show for my birthday. My birthday's April 6th. We're doing a show April 7th.
Fuck
Where I'm going to be doing a long set. I'm going to record a 45-minute set. So I'd love for some psychos to be in the audience for that. And any psychos that live in Denver, I'm going to be in Denver in a couple weeks. I'll be there. I'll be at the Denver Comedy Lounge on March 24th and 25th. If you join jfodnews.com, you can find out all the information about that. And I would love to see some psychos in the audience. It'd be really cool.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
All right. I think we nailed it with the plugs. All right. Without a further ado.
If you run a comedy show in London, book me.
Yeah, if you run a comedy show in London, book Juliana. Without further ado, please enjoy this episode of Take Your Pills, Psychopath. What's up, psychos? Okay, let's jump into it, Juliana. Our first article, kind of keeping with the theme that we have touched on in recent past episodes, a commentary about social media. You psychos want to hear more about that, right? Of course you do.
This is our common thread. This is where you and I really get into it, as the children say.
Yes, is that what the children do say?
You can tell I lost my train of thought there and just tried to save it by any means necessary.
It's all good. Hey, we don't know what the kids say. They say crazy things.
Yeah.
Okay, so with this one, psychos, we're flipping it on its head because this is a real hot take about social media.
Mm-hmm.
This author says, well, it doesn't say.
Well, she does say. Where are you going to go with this?
I'm just trying to read the title, psychos. This article is entitled, entitled, the unintended consequences of banning social media.
Ooh.
Severely limiting teen access to social media might do more harm than good.
What?
Hot take. Hottest of takes.
Hot take.
Yeah. Let's see here if we can get some key points out. All right. Severely limiting social media might have serious unintended consequences for teens. State legislation limiting social media often doesn't take complexity or nuance into account. Such legislation will likely have no measurable impact on improving youth mental health. Mm. States should consider investing in widespread media literacy education instead of attempting to limit access.
Just like with sex.
Yeah.
Literally, though. Just like with almost everything with teenagers. What you ban, you just don't have as much control as you think. So when you ban things, it rarely has the consequence you're hoping.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I guess I didn't realize that states are trying to completely ban social media.
A really weird way of that. It just that so clearly won't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, kids are very clever bastards. They will figure out a way.
Yeah, kids will figure it out. They'll get behind those firewalls or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, teenagers can. Yes, I think it's like it's one of the saddest and funniest things when you watch an adult try to outsmart or ban a teenager from technology because they're so far ahead of us. Like, it never works. I remember when I was my boss one time. I was in my early 20s. He had a daughter who was a teenager, and he said that his daughter didn't have a Facebook account. And I was like, "That's adorable that you think that she doesn't."
Well, maybe she didn't because Facebook's lame.
Maybe it was Instagram. I can't remember.
Okay.
He also thought that he could track her phone, and I was like, "You know, she could leave her phone other places." He was like, "But how could she text me?" And I was like, "Doesn't she have any other devices?" And he was like, "Yeah, 3.
Oh, you're undermining his confidence.
That was when I ruined parenting for him.
Yeah, you ruined his confidence in his parenting ability.
Ratted out his daughter, too.
Yeah, you did. You little home-breaking narc, I guess. You family-dividing narc. All right, here we go. I recently attended a mental health and social media symposium organized by Spencer Cox, the governor of my home state of Utah. Mm. Cox threw down the gauntlet. Quote, "There is a compounding effect of social media that is impacting all of us, and I am deeply worried about it. I know we have some social media companies in the room. We're glad you're here. We are putting you on notice. You have some options. You can fight, and that's fine. We're ready for the fight, or you can join us and be part of the solution." Sick. The message from several speakers at the conference was clear. Social media is harming our youth and is responsible for the increase of mental health struggles over the past decade. We should ban social media, and every responsible parent agrees with us. Social media companies are greedy and knowingly did harm comparable to the executives who perpetrated the opioid crisis. Now, there are a lot of things that I agree with in what was just written here.
A lot I agree with. Opioid crisis, I disagree with.
Hold on a second. Before you disagree with that, because I don't know if I necessarily agree with that comparison, but what I do agree with is the media, social media companies knowingly doing harm. That, I believe.
Okay, sure.
So in that respect, I think it's comparable to pharmaceutical executives knowing that they were doing harm.
Because they lied to doctors. Here is where I would say it's different. One, I don't think it's enough of a thing to compare one thing that does harm and another thing that does harm as like and like. Like, I know, for example, that like a person can know that chronically canceling plans on their friends does harm. I would not compare them to the opioid epidemic.
That's
just doing harm and doing harm are not to me.
No, it's the
like
knowingly.
Life.
It's the knowingly.
Knowingly doing
harm.
knowingly canceling on friends is knowingly doing harm.
It's different. It's different. I think that there is because I think that there is some comparison here because it's a big corporation. It's a big entity, a big power structure that is using their influence to harm people in different ways. Yes, in very different ways.
The very different ways. Yes. Where one is murdering people, essentially.
Well, this is murdering people's brains.
No. We're going to get more into the article.
Yes, we are.
We're going to get more into the article.
Yes, we are going to get more into
the
article.
Because I'm seeing point number one, which I won't skip to. But
let me read it first.
I think I'm going to come out on top.
Also, I don't necessarily think social media is murdering people's brains, but I do like that as a turn of phrase, though.
I like murdering people's brains. We can agree on that.
Yes. Okay.
Also, I think it's interesting you're agreeing with Utah parents. You might want to...
Hey, look, I've transcended the culture war. I've transcended the left-right divide. I agree with people on individual issues, and I see all people as worthy of life.
Crazy that a straight white guy from New Jersey could transcend the divide between him and people from Utah.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah. So much of the divide does not affect me whatsoever. That's why I focus on all these transnational issues, because
smart.
That affects everybody and even me and all of my privilege.
That's wise.
It's true, though. It does.
No, that was sincere. That's wise.
Yeah. I mean, I can use my privilege to have the bandwidth to pay attention to that nonsense.
Bandwidth is a social media term.
So don't make me murder your brain.
No, you are... All right, let's keep going.
Okay. Yeah, we've got...
We
got
to get to point one.
We do. Hold on. Social media has become the ultimate scapegoat of our time. As large social media companies rake in billions, it is easy to cast them in the role of the villain. Adolescent anxiety and depression have risen over the past decade, and we want someone to blame. As a result, states are suing social media companies for being responsible for mental health problems in their community. Legislators across the country are debating whether social media is responsible for the increase in mental health problems in youth. I mean, this may not be the case. I just hate social media so much that I'm like willing to give them like the, you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, they're the villains.
And they do suck. I'm not saying I like think that they're good in any way.
You are the biggest social media apologist in America right now.
Apologist?
Yes.
Because I don't think it's the same as the opioid crisis?
Yes.
I think it is in some ways offensive to compare the two.
Well, you don't know what it's like to be a seventh grade girl not getting the likes that you're supposed to get on Instagram that you want to get.
Actually, something I do. What? Why would I not know that?
Because Instagram wasn't around when you were in seventh
Instagram
grade.
Wasn't, but yeah. Facebook was.
Yeah.
I'm younger than you. I grew
this
up with
I know.
This. I actually did grow up with social media.
Yeah. Anyway, in my state, there was a bill being introduced that was considering an outright ban on social media for anyone under the age of 18. The bill was softened slightly to require parent ID for any underage youth. Other states have introduced similar bills to significantly limit youth access to social media. As a collective nation, we are at a fever pitch and out for blood. There is just one problem with this collective anger. It is not supported by the research. Sick
that was
burn.
Me dunking on John.
Look.
Murder your brains. That's not supported by research.
Why? Because this person said that? What is research?
Because this published article in a journal that you selected said it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we put on a pedestal the research that agrees with our agenda, and we disregard research that goes against it. It's the same with like polls and voting. We go, oh, look at that poll. That poll says so-and-so because I agree with it. I have faith in that poll. And then if you don't like it, you'd be like, oh, polls are bullshit.
That's totally true. And I would be more willing to hear that argument if you had other research that opposed it as opposed to just saying that you don't think it's right.
Well, we read other articles that talked about the potential for how it's changing people's brains. Social media is changing people's brains. Yes, there were serious problems with those articles.
All right, let's keep reading.
But still, we read them. All right, cool. Okay, this is the author saying this. I am a social media. What? What?
It was just funny if it was going to be you saying it.
We have to let me say what it is.
I'm sorry.
You're great. I am a social media scholar and have been studying the impact of media on children for 20 years. Get the hell out of here, lady. The collective research does not support banning social media and suggests it might harm some youth in the process. Okay.
I do want to point out, if I could wave a magic wand and make it so that no teenagers or children had access to social media, I would. I actually would be totally in favor of that.
Yeah.
Just for the record. I don't want to be too much of an apologist. I think it's bad. I think it's better. It's a better childhood without it. I don't think there is a magic wand is the problem.
Yeah, the genie is out of the...
Exactly. But I am not an advocate for children being on social media.
Yes, I got you. She is, though, in a way. She is. We'll get to it. Yeah, she is. Most serious social media scholars are left shaking our heads. Social media scholars. Stop calling yourself a social media scholar. Right?
You'd call yourself that if you could.
A social media... I would never call myself
an anti-social media scholar? Social media truthist? Truther?
Yeah, truther. I would definitely go for truther. There's never any conspiratorial negative connotation surrounding that word. I mean, anyone calling themselves a self-proclaimed scholar sounds kind of...
No, they sound arrogant and like a bit of a dick. You're totally right.
Anyway... Most serious social media scholars are left shaking our heads with the overconfident and definitive statements we hear from politicians and the press. The public discussion is dominated by some loud voices who are quick to point fingers, but slow to consult the full body of research, which shows considerable nuance and complexity. Can we just stop and take a breath for a minute? Consider that perhaps we might be going in the wrong direction. The kids are struggling, but that doesn't mean taking away social media will fix anything. Here are several reasons to believe that social media is not the cause of all of our youth's ills. All right, go for it, Juliana.
All right. One, the link between social media and mental health is not as big as you think. And notably, that's not saying there's no link.
I feel like she's talking directly to me.
She really is, especially the we just stop and take a breath for a minute?
I feel attacked.
Yeah. I actually found that to be an obnoxious sentence to write in an article. Can we just stop and take a breath for a minute?
Well, she's the scholar, Juliana.
You're right. She's the scholar. So the link is between social media and mental health is not as big as you think. In fact, many studies show that it might even be negligible. For example... I always find many studies to be a bit suspicious because it's like, so not most, just more than three.
Well, she's about to say a meta-analysis.
Okay, you're right. I should have read the next sentence. For example, meta-analyses bringing together all the studies on this topic tend to bring back correlations of about 0.10, depending on the study, like the difference in height between a 15 and 16-year-old girl. Okay, that's actually a good comparison. This is really quite small considering the attention we have been giving this question. Indeed, our research examined the time spent on social media, depression, and anxiety across the entire course of adolescence. We did not find a noticeable effect of social media on mental health when examined at the individual level. I was surprised and it went against my hypothesis. Gasp. But... That was in the article. I didn't say that. But I had to face the realization that this effect just isn't as big as we thought it was. The effects become larger around 0.25, maybe comparable to the difference in height between a 15 and 17-year-old girl, which is actually significant, when we consider a teen who says they have problems with social media, reducing problems around media as opposed to the sheer time. Sheer time by banning social media may be a more prudent way forward. More on this below.
Okay. What does that mean, 0.10 compared to 0.25?
That's the correlations. So they're saying, this is actually a pretty good example. So like the difference in height between a 15 and 16-year-old girl, you expect 16-year-old girls to be taller than 15-year-old girls, right?
Yeah.
But not all of them, obviously. Some will be even shorter. Some won't grow at all. So, and it's actually a pretty small amount because and the reason is by 15 and 16, most girls are actually done growing, which is why that's such a small number, 0.10. So it's only about, that is the, that it only explains, on a confident, on a variable of, like, a one correlation would be every 15-year-old girl taller than.
I get that part, but I guess I'm trying to understand what that number means relative to, or the 0.25, what that means, what kind of correlation that means relative to having positive compared to negative outcomes of using social media.
Oh, I see. So that actually is rather vague. These meta-analyses are saying you make a very good point, because she's very not clear with the language, actually. She's saying the link between social media and mental health. So she's saying, but she doesn't specify. So I'm with you. She doesn't specify exactly what the correlation is, whether it's increased social media use and mental health issues is the 0.10, or whether it's using social media at all, like yes or no versus having mental. She does not define her terms.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly.
And she calls herself a social media scholar.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It may be devil's advocate, maybe that it, because it's a meta-analysis, the terms are difficult to describe or define in those, but I am always suspicious of those who do not define their terms.
So all right,
I'm on your side.
Let's keep moving. 2, the small and inconsistent findings might be about individual differences. Some recent work out of the Netherlands suggests that the vast majority, 92% of adolescents, have either a neutral or positive experience in terms of mental health after using social media.
Okay, I'm with you now. This is bullshit.
What the fuck?
I'm with you now, John. I'm on your side. I'm truthing.
Yeah, we're social media truthers.
That seems hard to believe. I wonder if, I mean, you have to obviously look at the study, but that makes just the fact the Netherlands makes me think, is it possible that that's just a country where they have really good like mental health care for their teenagers and that's not a representative sample?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe. I don't know how people in the Netherlands feel about themselves. I don't know how kids in the Netherlands feel about themselves. Okay, what was I saying?
Sorry, using an assessment.
Okay. Using an assessment that measures how people feel in the moment, they were able to capture how adolescents felt while using social media. For the vast majority, they were just fine. All right. However, there is the question of that 8% struggle after being... Wait. However, there is the question of that 8% struggle after being on social media. There are many explanations for why this might be the case. They could have had negative experiences online, such as being cyberbullied or excluded. They could be high on levels of rejection sensitivity, being fine-tuned to notice a social slight. They might have pre-existing body image concerns and spend their time on pro-anorexia sites. Possible. Or it might be something completely different. Okay. What the research suggests is that the vast majority of adolescents do quite well on social media, while a small minority do not. Okay. Interesting. All right.
I am reading it with a lot of suspicion. I went into this wanting to be against you, John, and I'm really, she's making me suspicious.
Yeah. This Netherlands study, 92% neutral or positive experience.
I would be very interested with that.
In terms of mental health.
I'd be very interested with that in terms of how are they gauging that? Because getting teenagers to talk honestly about how they are feeling is notoriously difficult.
Juliana, so they use an assessment that measures how people feel in the moment.
Exactly. I'm extremely skeptical of any self-reported data from anyone, but especially from adolescents on how their mental health is. The idea that you think you're confident you're getting an accurate assessment, I'm skeptical.
I am as well. Now, this next section is interesting.
Right. I think this is one.
And worth considering and talking about. And it's, I think nuance is important here.
Yes, I agree.
You want to read it?
Yes. So banning or severely limiting social media will likely hurt our most vulnerable adolescents. It might even be fatal. Like the opioid crisis.
Comparison.
Comparison.
But actually, no, it's the opposite.
I know.
Damn it.
When we think about depression and anxiety from a multifaceted lens, we recognize that some adolescents are much more vulnerable than others. These teens are often those who experience minority stress, unique stressors that occur in an adolescent's environment as a result of their minority status. This might include LGBTQ plus teens who might be the only out person at their school, who have to tolerate hearing gay slurs as they walk down the hallway, or Black adolescents growing up in a predominantly white neighborhood who experience subtle and often not so subtle racism on a daily basis. Research suggests that social media can provide a safe haven for these adolescents, a place where they can truly belong, where they see others who are like them, where they can find a real community that understands the stressors they go through every day. Having a sense of belongingness, I didn't know that was a word, is a huge protective factor against suicide. Thus, stripping away the sense of safety might have significant and even deadly unintended consequences for these youth that are already at risk. Youth might also be turning to social media to cope with chaos and struggles in their lives. It might be that a teen has headphones on and is on social media to escape hearing his parents argue in the next room. Another might be getting support from online friends over something hard that happened at school. Yet another might struggle with social anxiety and experiences school as excruciating, yet has found online friends that make them feel like they can finally be themselves. The experiences of social media is extremely complex, and a complete ban will be likely to take away some truly positive coping skills for many.
This is interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a lot here to unpack and talk about and think about. I think there's something to it. I mean, life is very challenging if you feel alienated, especially as someone that's growing up and adolescence. And you can find some sort of sense of community someplace, and it happens to be through a social media platform, which I don't think is ideal in any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, to cut off that lifeline from somebody mm-hmm. completely without anything else replacing it, you'd like to think some sort of sense of IRL in real life community could be there.
I mean, but not necessarily the reality, especially if they're talking about like I think that's very real. If you're a queer kid who's growing up in a place where that's just absolutely not a thing, that really just might not be a reality that there is any community for you to find.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it just isn't.
It's just not a possibility.
Yeah. Or especially, I think, I mean, I'd like to think less now, but not really. And even more so for sure for trans kids who definitely, they're very, very possible if you don't live in a big city that you would not meet another trans kid in real life.
For sure.
At all.
So that is one for you, social media platforms.
A grudging one, because you are right. It's not the ideal. It's the watered down version of community that we would prefer be in real life, but that is currently, because of other factors, only accessible for some kids online.
Yeah, and I think it's the sort of thing, too, where the social media tech giants, I don't think they give a fuck about minority communities.
No, I don't think they do.
And oppressed groups and at-risk adolescents. I think they just want as many people as possible on their platforms for as long as possible. And that's their game.
Of course. I mean, they're corporations. That is the definite. I mean,
yeah,
that's what they do.
Yeah, and they did it.
That's obviously not in any way unique to social media corporations. That's just any corporation.
And they did it knowingly to harm people, very comparable to the opioid crisis.
We're
going to
move on.
Yay. All right. Where are we at? Number four?
Education.
Okay. Education instead of fear is likely the answer. In our recent study, we found that time spent on social media had no effect on adolescent outcomes. Now it's no effect.
Well, that's just one study.
Yeah, but she's in their recent study, we found. I feel like she's got a bias. There seems to be a bias here, but whatever.
There does. I can see that this seems to be a reaction to by someone who's seeing people actually talk about completely banning social media for teens, which I think would be a disaster for one of the points that she doesn't, and including here, doesn't mention, which is it would be incredibly unsuccessful. And it's exactly like, to me, I'm just like, that's an insane thing to do because it would be incredibly unsuccessful. And you'd wind up with a government trying to weirdly prosecute all kinds of bullshit that would you know, don't add more pointless ways to get kids in trouble with.
Yeah, me. I agree.
And that's to me. So I can see if you're in that position, I would just be like, stop it.
Yeah, fair enough. But she should still be like impartial as a doctor, a researcher,
a scholar,
rather, whatever she is. But also, we all know that I hate the government.
So, yeah, we do.
So I don't want them to be the arbiters, actually, of this sort of
right.
thing.
Right. I think there's a very different. I completely agree. I'm also like that. Parents want this is a bit of you. They're your child. Like you should. You need to develop this relationship with them. If you feel you're unable to control them being on social media, then you need to ask yourself why. And will that change if the law changes? If you, their parent who's with them, who's in the house with them, who controls and pays for their device, if you don't have that power, do you really think that a law on the books is going to have that power?
That's a really good point. And I think that there should be responsibility on the sake of the parents to regulate the screen time of their kids.
Right.
And I know that is something that a lot of parents have to navigate and do navigate. And I'm sure some do it better than others. Yeah. But then again, if unfortunately the adolescent doesn't have reliable caretakers, then that possibility isn't there too.
Absolutely. I would posit that if a child who doesn't have reliable caretakers is also unlikely to it, a law like this would probably also be unlikely to impact them.
Yeah. And I mean,
it to impact their behavior. I apologize.
It's just ridiculous. The idea of, I mean, I think we're just in a really bad situation all around.
I agree. I think it's a bad situation all around.
Yeah. It's a bad situation all around where you've got these tech companies that are super powerful and that have created these platforms on purpose to keep us addicted and fuck with our dopamine levels and all of that sort of stuff. And then at the same time, now you've got certain factions of the government that want to put some sort of laws in place that how would they even possibly be enacted and work? And you know, and I'm sure there'd be some way for the government to exploit it for their own purposes.
Right.
Because I don't trust them.
I mean, would it be at all similar? There are laws, right, against children accessing porn websites, and the whole thing is they just have to click a thing that says they're 18, right? So would this, I'm assuming this would just be the exact same.
Well, they already rolled it back. Saying in this thing, they already rolled it back saying parental right. ID. So
it's already just like, what are you talking about?
It seems like posturing.
The enforceability angle.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Like posturing.
But anyway, here we go. Education instead of fear is likely the answer. In our recent study, we found that time spent on social media had no effect on adolescent outcomes. However, body image was twice as good for teens who said they attended a school with a strong literacy program that helped them become healthy users of media. Depression, emotional problems, and conduct problems were also reduced in such schools. Okay. Instead of focusing so much on getting kids to put down their phones, instead of threatening to take phones away as punishment, instead of overreacting as a country and banning a potentially useful tool that is a huge part of an adolescent social world, might we invest in education instead? Snarky. Imagine a world where every student had classes on digital literacy from an early age, where they were taught not only how to use media, but how to truly interpret it and to become critical thinkers of their media use. Imagine that adolescents utilize social media in ways that helped their mental health instead of hurting it, where they had tools and best practices to absolutely thrive in a digital environment. Okay, I like this.
Yeah.
Instead of being afraid and throwing out the baby with the bathwater, let's step it up, America.
You can tell this person's from Utah.
Fired up. No, they're not from Utah. Are they from Utah too?
This appeared in the Salt Lake Tribune, so I'm inclined to think.
Oh, you're right. Let's invest in educating our youth at a national level, relying on balanced and accurate research to empower youth to truly take charge of their social media experiences for good. Banning or severely limiting social media among adolescents is not the way forward and will have serious unintended consequences. It would be like letting a 16-year-old child drive without first having them take driver's education. instead of taking the keys away and randomly giving them back someday? Can we please teach our kids to drive in this digital environment? It might just save a life. Damn. Mm.
There's some logic questions in that last paragraph, but overall, I think that the point about digital literacy is excellent.
Yes, I think, I agree that we absolutely should teach digital literacy at an early age for kids who were born into the digital age and the information era, you know?
Yeah, no question.
I mean, I'm old enough that I got to have a childhood before it. I got to have like an analog childhood.
What was that like?
It was fucking wonderful. I feel grateful that I've had that, but was also young enough when all this shit started that I've been able to be, you know, adept with it and roll with it and, you know, stay present and relevant and capable. But I do actually feel like something is lost for, in a sense, for people that are just grow up with it their whole lives.
I think that's probably true. And I think it, as you said before, I think it's just a genie in the bottle situation.
Yeah.
I think it would be ideal if children didn't grow up with social media. And I think that possibility is simply out the window.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is out the window. This was a fiery article, huh?
This was.
Yeah.
Some good back and forth.
This is good. I like it. Very comparable to the opioid crisis is what I would say. All right, I'll stop.
Yeah, that's enough from you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You love it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Should we go to the next one?
Yeah, let's go to the next one.
Okay. This one is called 4 Things We Can't Control and Need to Accept. How to Let Go of the Things You Cannot Control to Find Inner Peace. Ooh, this sounds good, doesn't it?
This is promising a lot right off the bat.
It is, right? Inner peace? Holy shit. This is going to be like an expansion of the Serenity Prayer. You know the Serenity Prayer?
No. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. God, give me the grace. God, give me the... Oh, no, I'm going to fuck it up. God, give me the grace to control the things I can control, not control the things I can't control.
You have messed it up already.
And the grace to know the difference. Do you know it?
No, it's not that... Give me the strength to change the things I can, the something to accept the things I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah.
I fucked it up.
Really you bad. Fucked it up real bad.
Whatever. I'm not in AA.
Okay. That's what it's from?
That's like a big part of AA is the Serenity Prayer.
Oh, it's also a big part of just like lots of stuff.
Yeah. It's just a big part of religion, right?
Yeah, and also people say it without God. Also, like, I grew up totally a-religious, just that was, like, a thing that you say, like, more as a mantra.
Yeah. I just... Corny, I fucked it up. I forgot it completely. God, give me the grace to forgive myself for not remembering the Serenity Prayer properly.
It's funny, I forgot that God was even a part of it because I grew up with...
The a-religious version?
Yeah. It just, which just begins with grant me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Key points. We need to focus on and worry about the things we have little. Wait, we tend to focus on and worry about the things we have little to no control or influence over. There are things we cannot control and need to accept for our well-being and inner peace. Tightening our grip on the things that we cannot control just fuels feelings of helplessness and despair. Okay. What do you spend most of your time worrying about or fixated on? Me personally, John?
Yeah.
CBDCs, central bank digital currency. We're not going to talk about it.
Love you.
My guess is that you worry about the future, yep, and the uncertainty that life brings. Totally. The things that we have little to no control over. I used to be consumed with worries about life milestones and other people's perceptions of me. I would obsess and spiral in my thoughts, thinking about all the what ifs and worst case scenarios that I could maybe avoid or somehow change and manipulate. Of course, this approach was not very helpful because the things I would worry about were either A, almost always impossible to predict or plan, or B, things I could not directly influence, or both.
Seems like those are two kind of the same thing.
They're similar for sure, right?
Yeah. If it's impossible to predict or plan, isn't it inherently something that you... I guess not. Never mind. I take it back. Yeah. I'm nitpicking.
Yes, you are.
Per use.
It's your thing. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. In our fear-based society, we often try to do everything in our power to take control. Fear-based brain murder. All right, cool.
I would like to know, when they say that, I would really like to know, like, they could specify the society. Do they mean American society? Do they mean Western society? What? Specify society for your reader, please.
Yeah. It's just a broad, it's a broad
our
stroke.
Our fear-based society. Okay, which one? Like, the human condition, Western culture, American culture? Like, what do you...
I think that...
Little, like, upper middle class, like...
I got you. I think that they just wanted to... They just thought the turn of phrase, fear-based society, sounded cool.
I think you're right.
So I think they wanted to write it.
I think you're right.
And I can't blame them for it, because it sounds... It's cool. It's fun to read. Mm. In our fear-based society, we often try to do everything in our power to take control. We like to be on it and one step ahead.
I don't know why I find that funny.
Trying to troubleshoot everything. We don't like to feel unprepared or vulnerable, and we'll go to great lengths to avoid stress and things that are hard and uncomfortable. But this is a losing battle. Tightening our grip and expelling energy on the things that we cannot control just fuels feelings of helplessness and despair. Let's make a shift then and let go of the need to control those things that are outside of our control. Start with these four things. Go for it, Juliana.
The future. So many of us struggle with the uncertainty of the future. Fair. We want to know when, where, and how things will happen. We can make plans and want to see them through in the exact way we had envisioned them. But much as we try, we cannot always plan for the exact timing of things or how they will unfold. Life happens, and there are external factors that make it impossible for us to have complete certainty about the future. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whether it's a global pandemic, cheap shot, losing a job, or a family member becoming sick, sometimes we must pivot and take things as they come. This isn't to say that our goals and pursuits are not worth pursuing, but that we need practice having more cognitive flexibility, a mental shift that encourages us to be more open to the fluidity of life and timing. Additionally, while we might not know what the future holds or what tomorrow brings, we do know that in this very moment we are breathing and alive, and that there are things we do have control over, things we can do to take care of ourselves and cope with uncertainty.
Okay. This sounds like... Yeah.
I would have preferred that header said the uncertainty of the future rather than the future.
Because I don't know why that bothered you.
Because... The future is something we absolutely have control over. We certainly don't have complete control over, but to suggest we don't have any control over the future is like declaring helplessness.
Yeah, but the next section she just calls the past. She's just
But the past you actually don't yet now have any control over. That you truly don't have any control over.
Well, you can have control over it in the respect that you can control how you view past actions, and you can kind of rewire your brain about your assessment of them.
Absolutely, but you can't control the actual past.
That's true. I just had no problem with her just writing the future.
You always have fewer problems with things than me.
I do. I have considerably fewer problems than you. That's so good.
Solid.
All right.
The past, you go.
Two, the past. Well, this one may seem obvious, being that the past... It's fine. It's quite literally in the past. We tend to voraciously cling to it. Yeah, we do.
We do.
When thinking about our past, we tend to focus on the things we could have done differently. The could have, should have, would have's. Or try to find a why. Whether it's replaying a conversation over and over again in our heads, trying to make meaning of a significant life event, or simply thinking about how life used to be, it's hard for us to let go. And while it is healthy and normal to engage in self-reflection, grieve, and learn from our past experiences, there's a difference between being reflective or nostalgic and becoming consumed or obsessed with the past. That's fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the next time you find yourself stuck in the past, try grounding yourself in the present moment. Notice your current environment and surroundings and remind yourself of the things you are grateful for and the people you have in your life right now. Okay, so what's going on here is mindfulness and a gratitude practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically, and I think about the future. She's also just saying have a sense of mindfulness. And basically, so much of this stuff is about being present.
Yeah.
And not spinning out and trying to give yourself a break from the subjective carnival rolling in your head of just thoughts and memories and everything like that.
I will say one thing that I like that's it's what this is saying to do, but I find it much more helpful when people don't just, when you give more specific advice than notice your current environment and surroundings. To me, when someone says that to me, I'm like, okay, buddy. But an actual thing that I find helpful that's exactly along those lines is doing a thing you take when you're, if you're spinning out, you take a moment and you think of five things that you can see, four things that you can hear, three things that you can touch, two things you can smell, and one thing you can taste. It's actually a more helpful than saying like, notice your current environment because it gives you a more concrete way of doing that. I actually recommend it. I find it to be really helpful.
Yeah, I think that it is definitely, I think the being more specific in that respect and being more, I think that's better than just saying it broadly. I've never heard that before, actually.
Yeah, I really recommend it because I tend to shy away from stuff because I don't like anything that reminds me of like being, makes me feel like it's corny or cliche. But I find that one actually is good because it really gives me something to focus on that's very immediate.
Yeah. To be able to, though, even if it's sort of broad, just say like, I can focus on, if I'm having like recurring thoughts, unwanted thoughts, if I can focus physically on how I'm feeling and focus on my breathing and remember that what I'm experiencing is not unique to me. The specifics are, but the phenomenon is not. And I should have enough compassion for myself to realize that the judgment I'm putting on it is why I keep thinking about it. So even though that's more a broad way of looking at it, where it'd be like, okay, focus on how you're feeling physically, focusing on your breathing, I still do think there is something to that as well.
No, that's, I like that more. I think I like that as well.
Yeah. But notice your current environment and surroundings is just pretty broad.
Yeah. I always prefer if you're going to give that advice that you just give someone something a little more concrete. If you're in a place that you're spinning out, you tend to not be so receptive to that kind of broad advice and you need something a little more, like even focus on your breath. That is concrete.
Yeah. Cool. You want to read the third part?
Sure. What other people are thinking and feeling. Goddamn. True. We focus way too much on the internal processes of others. True. This fixation on what other people are thinking and feeling is typically related to our own insecurities and need for external validation. Also true. We worry about how other people perceive us, whether they quote unquote like us or not, and their judgment and opinions. As a result, we jump to conclusions and make assumptions, oftentimes going off very limited information like a facial expression or our own past experiences and trauma, which can cause distress. Think about how many times you have interpreted a text as someone being mad at you or attributing another person's bad mood to something you did and without any true evidence of this. Fair is fair. In reality,
I feel like this one's resonating with you so far.
I mean,
shit.
I'm also a woman. This is just how women operate in life, I think. I mean, men too. But women are very conditioned to do all of this.
Okay. Keep going.
In reality, we cannot read minds and we cannot control the perceptions of others. What we can control are our own internal processes. So if you notice yourself consumed by thoughts about another person, ask yourself, how helpful is it for me to spend time worrying about this person and what's going on in their head? Or how much control do I actually have over what this person is thinking or feeling? Or if you find yourself obsessing over being liked or seen in a favorable light by another person, focus on how you view yourself. Ask yourself, do I like me? Do you think you are a good person? If the answer is no, what are some things you can do to be the best version of you? At the end of the day, the longest and most meaningful relationship we will ever have in our lives is the relationship with ourselves. Notwithstanding the platitude at the end of that, which I don't really care for, I think that's all very good points.
I kind of like the platitude.
Okay, platitude's fine.
You know? At the end of the day, the longest and most meaningful relationship we will ever have in our lives is the relationship with ourselves. You're right, it's kind of corny.
Mm-hmm. But plus, like, what if you, that's not necessarily true. What if you die before your mom does?
I guess, yeah. Holy shit.
Gotcha, bitch.
Gotcha.
That's why I'm here, folks.
Sick.
To catch platitudes with logical.
To undermine platitudes at every turn. Absolutely. With sick burns.
Sick burns. Hope you die before your mom, I guess.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was bad.
What other people are thinking and feeling. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I think I used to, in the past, care more about it than I do now, but it still happens for sure.
Oh,
for
yeah.
For sure. I think it's kind of... I was going to say it's part of the human condition, but I don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot of people that truly don't give a fuck and some that overwhelmingly do. Yeah. I think there's a spectrum of it, for
sure. There is. I think, you know? For sure, women are very, and little girls are very conditioned to, not all, obviously it doesn't, not all, but tend to be quite conditioned to...
Care about what other people think of you?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
It's something you struggle with?
I have yet to meet a female person who does not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We suffer in not so much silence, but we...
Certainly suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah, being a woman, I would not wish it on my worst enemy.
Yeah, I know. I agree. You meant it as a joke. I'm just right here for it.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
You're doing so good. You're going to London.
No, I know. And I feel, but it's definitely a thing that you are conditioned, little girls especially, it's just a thing that you're very conditioned to need that kind of approval.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think.
And a lot of men struggle with it too. I don't want to diminish. I don't mean to diminish that at all.
And I think, I guess it's in all facets of life, but I think in the entertainment industry, in the comedy world.
Oh, for sure.
There's a totally thing where it's like, oh, what does this other comic think of me? Do they like me? Da, 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 da. There's a lot of potential insecurity surrounding that for a lot of people.
And one of the hard things about that with comedy is that there is an actual reality that... Then this is somewhat true in every job, but in a much more obvious, personal, and immediate sense, that how much people like you does, to a certain extent, determine how well you do in your career and how, and often how good you are at your career. The way that you make people feel on stage as a comedian is, one, actors are vulnerable in a similar way, but at least they are not sharing literally themselves as a comedian. When it's hard to think of a more personal way to be rejected than you saying something about yourself that you think is funny, that you think is good, and that's only about you, and having other people kind of disagree. No, nothing there.
You're putting out a lot of vulnerability.
It's a lot of vulnerability
to potentially be rejected. And it's not only like work rejected, it's also socially rejected. Exactly. Because both things are totally...
Totally intertwined.
Intertwined.
And even the people who aren't your friends, who don't even know you, it's a very... Whether an audience likes you is a big part of whether they're willing to engage with you and laugh at you. So feeling like you're not liked in any situation can be hard, but feeling like you're not liked and it's dooming your career is especially... difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Good thing we're both so likable on stage.
I can't decide if I'm more likable in life or on stage. It's so much of both.
Yeah. I mean, you're just, it's just so much likability. It's hard to tell.
Charisma. It's charisma.
You got charisma oozing out of all of your pores.
Ew.
I made the compliment sound gross. All right. Here's the last part of this article. Here we go. 4, other people's actions and life choices. We can become overly invested in the decisions of others, especially the decisions of the people we love and care for most. Mm. We may find ourselves worrying about a loved one's lifestyle and habits, their relationship patterns, or even their belief system and personal values. Whether we dislike a close friend's partner or have a difficult time interacting with a parent because of their opposing political beliefs or stances, the life choices and preferences of others are typically things we cannot control. While we can always try to have a respectful conversation and express our concerns, it is important to remember that we cannot impose our own beliefs and expectations onto others. Accepting others as they are is crucial for our own mental well-being. I agree with this a lot.
Yeah, I think it's very, very good. And I would add, I think a thing to add, which they don't need to get into. I'm not criticizing the article for not, because it's kind of a whole other topic. Accepting others as they are is absolutely crucial for our own mental well-being. And accepting who others are is not something that can be a healthy part of our lives. I am not criticizing the article for not going into that. It's a short paragraph.
That's fair. I agree with you there. But also, I have reconciled for myself with people that I do think are worthwhile to keep in my life.
Absolutely.
That I'm really like, okay, life's too short. I'm not going to try to change this person's
mind. Right. Because it's not going to work. Because it's not going to work.
It's not going to work. You know? I mean, the thing that's really troubling about it for me is that I'm always right.
I understand that. So I'm always liked. You're always right.
Yes, you're always liked. I'm always right. So it's draining for both of us.
It must be. It's a hard. We have a hard time.
We do. We struggle with that.
I think we're.
We're doing good on time. Yeah. We're right in an hour, so we did good. Oh, we just did two articles this time.
Yeah, but we had some good banter.
We did. We had very good banter. I think our banter is improving.
I agree. I think I'm getting better at stepping on you, us, and vice versa.
Yes, I feel like we're finding more of the rhythm. It's almost like doing this a few times
helps
and gets you better at
crazy.
It. Isn't that unbelievable?
I don't agree.
Yeah. Not like we were ever bad, but we're getting better.
Yeah. I mean, that would suggest we have control over the future, wouldn't it?
It would. It would. We do have some control over the future.
Perhaps influence is better.
Influence
rather than control. Influence.
Yeah. We have some influence, or we have some capability to direct the future outcome.
You're just trying to say control. That's what that was.
I was trying to say control without saying control.
Yeah.
All right. So should I just do the plugs?
Yeah, let's do the plugs.
All right. You guys know the deal here. Drop us a line at takeyourpillspod@gmail.com. A lot of podcasts, they say that drop us a line thing at the end as like an afterthought. We say it first because we do want to cultivate and connect with the community of psychos. So even let us know what you think about the new format with Juliana.
Yeah.
Takeyourpillspod@gmail.com. Oh, I forgot to say, I have a stand-up special on YouTube. It's called The Manic Depressive Chocolate Fountain Operator.
Hell yeah.
Pretty proud of it. You can check that out on YouTube if you want. It's an hour of my stand-up. Live shows in Denver. That's March 24th and 25th at the Denver Comedy Lounge. You can find that online. You can also find it if you join my newsletter at jfodnews.com. You can follow us on social media at @JFodLovesYou and @Juliana_Maher.
Yeah, watch The Diplomat when it comes out on Netflix.
Definitely watch.
We don't have a date yet, but it will be happening.
Definitely watch The Diplomat when it comes out, for sure. That's the show that Juliana has been working on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/JFOD. You can subscribe and like and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That would be really great. And if you're in the New York area, come out April 7th my special birthday show, where I'll be taping 45 minutes of stand-up. Be exciting.
It'll be great, guys.
Yeah. So once again, this has been another episode of Take Your Pills, Psychopath, the comedy podcast that exploits mental illness for personal profit, trademark. I've been Jonathan O'Donnell, here with
Juliana Maher.
And we appreciate you psychos listening. Enjoy the rest of your day, afternoon, evening, night, wherever you are. Love you guys. Bye.